Inauguration Day is less than 2 weeks away, and the second Trump term will begin. What could that mean for Greater Cincinnati? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today, we're going to talk about the Trump administration's priorities and how they could test Congress and the U.S. Supreme Court. Joining me now are Fox News senior congressional correspondent Chad Pergram. Thanks for being here, Chad.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
And WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Welcome back, Howard.
Thank you, Lucy.
So the presidential election was just certified on January 6th. Chad, how'd it go?
Well, a lot better than 4 years ago. It was smooth. There were no challenges to any of the states. We didn't expect that. It was pretty clear here that President-elect Trump had won. The security at the Capitol, and I'm speaking to you from the Capitol right now, was pretty extraordinary. Several layers of fencing. There was no threat to the Capitol, violence like we saw 4 years ago, which was just one of the most ignominious days in the history of the United States. And they certified the election. And I thought it was interesting and ironic, and this has happened three times in recent decades. It was Vice President Harris, in her capacity as president of the Senate, who under the 12th Amendment and statute, they preside over the joint session, which certifies the election. And she presided over her own defeat. And she joins kind of an illustrative club here of people who've done that before. You had Richard Nixon in 1961, Hubert Humphrey in 1969, and of course, Al Gore famously in 2001 after the Florida election dispute.
How awkward was that, Howard? Did that seem awkward for her to have to do?
You know, I don't know that it was awkward for her because she's a professional. She knows what she respects the process and she respects the Constitution. Watching it from afar, I thought it went off perfectly. And she did her job and the peaceful transition of power, which is what we have enjoyed for the most part, except 4 years ago. Has gone on uninterrupted.
Yeah. Chad, the vote to reelect House Speaker Mike Johnson went more quickly than some people had expected. What do you think that means for Speaker Johnson's agenda and getting anything done in the House?
Well, what has passed as prologue with Speaker Johnson? He knew it was going to be tight. As I always say, it's always about the math. He could lose one vote ultimately and retain the speakership based on the math, the way they do the speakership. And at the end of that first vote, they did not close the first vote, but there were three persons who had voted for somebody else, including Thomas Massie, the Republican from Northern Kentucky, who had voted for Tom Emmer, who's the majority whip. He has not been on the same page with Speaker Johnson in a long time. I did think it was interesting that Warren Davidson, the Republican congressman from Butler County and further north, Davidson had told me at one point in an interview I did with him in about January, February last year, that he thought that his vote in October of 2023 for Mike Johnson was one of the biggest votes that he regretted the most, voting for Mike Johnson. He wasn't pleased with the way they were handling spending bills and just the overall agenda. And Warren Davidson ultimately voted for Mike Johnson, and there was no dispute whatsoever. The past is prologue. Here's the problem. The math does not get any better for Mike Johnson. He will lose Elise Stefanik in just a few days here. She has been nominated and what she is confirmed to be the ambassador to the United Nations, the congresswoman from upstate New York. He will lose Michael Waltz, who doesn't have to be confirmed, but he's going to become the national security advisor. He's a congressman from Florida. And then the numbers in the House will be 217 Republicans and 215 Democrats. They can't lose anybody because 216 is a tie. If you have people whose flights are delayed, if you have people who are out sick or have to attend their kids' play, having the numbers in the House of Representatives to do anything is going to be a real challenge. And a lot of people, there was one person who I spoke with who follows tax policy very closely, and they indicated to me, Lucy, that they thought that the vote, even though they eventually got two other members to vote for Mike Johnson and Massie remained the only person who voted against him, that vote was a mirage. The idea that they were just able to say, oh, we did this on the first vote, we did this on the first ballot, and everything is hunky-dory. It is going to be a beast to get some of these things done, especially under this process you're going to hear about, budget reconciliation. Every single person is now a Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin, the former independent senator from West Virginia who caucused with the Democrats, basically made himself a player on most pieces of major legislation in the Senate, and things wouldn't move unless Kyrsten Sinema, the former independent senator also from Arizona who retired, and Manchin blessed something. You now have, in addition to Mike Johnson, 434 Joe Manchins in the House of Representatives, and everybody's going to want something because they're going to look for some leverage on every single bill. It's generally believed here in Washington that the Republicans may have overpromised and underdelivered, because when they talk about this mandate, if you actually crunch the numbers, you know, they didn't win in some, you know, Reagan-esque 84, you know, going away here. They barely held the House. They do have a bit of a majority in the Senate now, but it is going to be very, very tight. And the proof of the pudding on this will be in the eating.
Howard, what do you think that'll mean for Cincinnati congressional representatives? I'm thinking of Greg Landsman, Congressman Greg Landsman, who's a Democrat. Does that close math give him any more of an edge in trying to help get things done that he wants to see done?
Well, I think in the end, it may well, you know, Chad is exactly right about this. You know, right after that vote, there were a group of the MAGA Republicans in the House who had voted for Johnson for Speaker, but they pretty much very publicly put him on notice saying, look, you know, you're going to have to deal with us if you want to get anything done in this House. So I'm not sure. I mean, you know, it seems like to me, if Mike Johnson wants to get things done, he's going to have to reach out to people like Landsman, people on the other side of the aisle. But as Chad said, this is not going to be easy. This is going to be very difficult. And it's going to have a huge impact on the Trump agenda.
We're talking about the next Trump administration and what it could mean for Greater Cincinnati. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. President-elect Trump held a news conference this week at Mar-a-Lago, laying out some of his priorities, including some acquisitions.
Because Canada and the United States, that would really be something. You get rid of that artificially drawn line and you take a look at what that looks like. And it would also be much better for national security.
That also includes Greenland.
Well, we need Greenland for national security purposes. I've been told that for a long time, long before I even ran. I mean, people have been talking about it for a long time. You have approximately 45,000 people there. People really don't even know if Denmark has any legal right to it. But if they do, they should give it up because we need it for national security. That's for the free world. I'm talking about protecting the free world.
Chad, what do you think about that? Were those comments posturing? How seriously should we all be taking these comments?
Well, there's always this debate in Washington about whether or not you take President-elect Trump seriously or literally. I just came up from a press conference with Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic leader, and politically, he immediately sees an opening here. I'll just tell you what he said. This wasn't said 20 minutes ago in the press conference. He said, you know, when you talk about these things, he said, we believe that House Democrats were not sent to Washington to invade Greenland, rename the Gulf of Mexico, seize the Panama Canal by force. We were sent to Washington to lower the high cost of living in the United States of America. He called this, quote, foolishness. And so if you have that type of talk coming out of the president-elect Trump's mouth, Democrats might have an opportunity, maybe a wedge there to seize on that. You know, people were talking about the economy and the price of milk and eggs and butter and bread and all those literal kitchen table issues going into the election here. And if they're out talking about these imperialistic pie in the sky ideas and ticking off your allies in Canada, you know, that's a real problem. It was also, you know, Hakeem Jeffries was also throwing some Brooklyn shade. Dusty Johnson is a Republican congressman from South Dakota. And just today, he introduced a bill to allow President-elect Trump to authorize the takeover of the Panama Canal. And as you know, President Carter is lying in state in the Capitol Rotunda as we speak. And so I asked Hakeem Jeffries if it was, quote, impolites for that bill to be introduced, since he presided over the treaties between the United States and Panama in 1977 and 78, to introduce that bill, as the president who authorized that is lying in state. And I said, Dusty Johnson has written this bill. And the Brooklyn shade came from Jeffries, and he said, "Dusty who?" And he walked off.
Oh,
so
my.
We're probably going to see a lot of that from the Democrats.
Howard, what do you make of these comments about Canada and Greenland?
Well, number one, I think, Trump talks about artificial boundaries between the United States and Canada. Well, they're not artificial. They're real. As far as Greenland's concerned, I think there's just a game being played about what we need from that largest island in the world. But I don't believe any of this is going to happen. And really, Donald Trump had a pretty impressive election victory, not as great as he has described it himself, but a solid mandate. But I don't think the mandate was for this kind of imperialism, this new American imperialism. I think people want them to get down to real issues that affect people's lives. And we're not hearing any of that out of Donald Trump, or not very much out of Donald Trump about that so far. And I think sooner or later, some kind of buyer's remorse is going to set in among some of the people who ended up voting for Donald Trump in November, when they see nothing but this kind of nonsense.
Let's talk about some of the priorities that did come up on the campaign trail. The president-elect talked a lot about mass deportation. He talked about ending birthright citizenship. Chad, where do you think all that will stand with this Congress? How easy or difficult will it be to get things like that done?
Well, it's probably going to be easier for congressional Republicans to move something on border security. That's something they ran on. It's something that it seems that maybe there was a little bit of a frustration by Democrats that maybe they didn't get out ahead of that that issue, that Democrats seem to be vulnerable on that, in a lot of our polling at Fox and just other places as well. Border security was polling consistently number one and number two, usually several spots ahead of the economy, frankly. Something interesting happened in the House of Representatives just yesterday. They passed the Laken Riley Act. She was the Georgia nursing student who was killed by an undocumented person from Venezuela when she went out for a jog. And this passed the House of Representatives last year. 37 Democrats voted yes. And so the first piece of legislation on the floor in the House this year, because it's going to take them some time to tackle, tax issues and cutting spending and so on. I mean, April is really the deadline for that, according to House Speaker Mike Johnson. They started with border security, and they start with it with the Laken Riley Act. And this would require federal detention of persons who are arrested for minor crimes like shoplifting or theft. They haven't been convicted necessarily. Well, that number rose from 37 Democrats to 48 Democrats in the House of Representatives yesterday. You had six Democrats who voted against it last time, who voted yes this time around. The difference in the numbers is you have some new Democrats in the House of Representatives, including some more moderate figures. Shamari Figures, who's a Democrat from Alabama, is a freshman, for instance. Henry Cuellar, who's a Democrat from Texas, one of the most conservative Democrats in the House, who also represents a border district, he voted for it. Joe Morelli, who's a Democrat from central New York, who did not vote for it last time, but did vote for it then. And so the question is whether or not Democrats are starting to get religion on this. And I interviewed John Fetterman, the Democratic senator from Pennsylvania, yesterday, who came out in favor of this. And this morning, I also interviewed Ruben Gallego, the freshman Democratic senator from Arizona, who took over for the aforementioned Kyrsten Sinema. And he is for it as well. And he says, look, according to Senator Gallego, when you talk to some of these Democrats, maybe they didn't play that issue right. The question now is whether or not they can break a filibuster in the Senate. And the new Senate Majority Leader John Thune has teed up a test vote on that for Friday. It's going to be very close. We'll see if they're able to get there. But that's going to be the first thing that we hear about, border security, is this Laken Riley Act in the Senate and the House.
Howard, what about birthright citizenship? How much would it take to eliminate that, and what kind of impact would that have on, you know, not only children of undocumented immigrants, but also everybody?
Well, that is something that would affect like 30 to 40 million Americans, you know, people who have birthright citizenship when their parents had come here from another country. This is in the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. This is not, this is something that has been the case since day number one of this nation. You would have a very heavy lift to change that or get rid of that. You're not going to get rid of the 14th Amendment. And I don't think even the U.S. Supreme Court, as conservative as it's been, is ready to go that far. So I doubt seriously if this is going to happen. One point I wanted to make about these immigration issues. J.D. Vance, during the campaign, said something to the effect of, well, this is like going to McDonald's and getting a Big Mac. You're not going to eat it in one bite. You eat it over a period of time, one bite at a time. And he was referring to immigration and trying to close the border and deportation and all of these other issues that Trump talked about during the campaign. I think we need to take some of this with a grain of salt. It's a massive, massive thing that would cost an enormous amount of money, and money that does not exist.
One of the other things that the president-elect has talked about is kind of undoing some of what President Joe Biden did in office, including infrastructure spending. And I wonder what you think, Chad. I know you're very familiar with this region. You grew up in Butler County. You've worked here locally years ago. You and Howard go back a long ways. What could this mean in terms of federal dollars flowing to greater Cincinnati, especially when it comes to something like the Brent Spence Bridge Corridor project?
Well, you know, a lot of that money is not out the door yet. And when they talk about cutting money, you know, this is the Doge project by Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, also a Cincinnatian, as you well know. You know, when they talk about the cutting, where does that cutting come from? They say they're not going to touch entitlements, okay, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, that accounts for about 63% of every federal dollar. I'll say that again, about 63% of every federal dollar that is spent total right there. So you're not going to cut any of that. All right, okay. Then you could go on to defense. Well, that in that remaining 37% of everything, you're up to about 18, 19% of every federal dollar there. So you're down to this minuscule, you know, slice of pie there, you know, 15-16%, and somewhere in there is infrastructure and everything else. Well, a big project like that, is that on the board? We don't know yet. There's not enough money if you're truly going to balance the books, as Howard alluded to about, you know, deportation, where they're talking about that costing probably $100 billion or more. I don't know. I think that's probably a low figure. But, and how much time? Again, it's projects like that that are going to be key to watch. And again, whoever succeeds J.D. Vance in the Senate, that's somebody who's going to be on the hook for that. I would look for somebody like Thomas Massie, you know, from Northern Kentucky. Mitch McConnell is no longer the top Republican in the Senate for the first time in, you know, 18 years since 2007. So the region loses a little bit of clout there. That's something to look at. But he still continues to be a senior member of the Senate Appropriations Committee. That's the committee that spends the money in Washington, D.C., and Mitch McConnell. He's still Mitch McConnell. He might not have his fastball still, but he still is Mitch McConnell when it comes to local projects and things of that nature. So right there, you know, we kind of put that in the wheelhouse when it comes to the spending. And by the way, I should remind everybody that Brent Spence, the bridge itself is named after Congressman Brent Spence from Northern Kentucky, who served from the 1940s into the 1960s.
Again, we're talking about national politics and what the incoming administration could mean for Greater Cincinnati. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Howard, Chad just mentioned a replacement for Vice President-elect J.D. Vance. What are you thinking about that? It seems like Governor DeWine is holding that decision pretty close to the vest.
Yeah, he is. And I'm not really surprised at that. Mike DeWine does things by the book. And right now, there is no, Vance hasn't really said when he's going to leave the Senate. I mean, he has to obviously do it by January 20th. There are people being interviewed for this job. There was a lot of speculation about John Houston, the lieutenant governor, because DeWine took him down to Mar-a-Lago with him for the event with the Italian prime minister and this John Eastman movie. And I don't want to read too much into that because, he may be appointed to the Senate seat, but he may not. He's also organizing a campaign for Ohio governor, where he would be, I think, the leading candidate from either party. So, and there are other people like Jane Timken, who used to be the Ohio Republican Party chair, who has been offering herself as a possible U.S. senator from Ohio. And it's probably appealing to DeWine in one sense, because Ohio's never had a woman serve in the United States Senate. And that would be groundbreaking. So it's too early. And Mike DeWine, as I said, is going to play this very close to his vest until absolutely. I mean, I talk to his press people every day now, and I keep getting the same answer, which is, well, we're working on it.
Lucy and Howard, if I can jump back in here, I had made some of those same calls here and some sources very close to the governor. I get the sense that this is not quite figured out yet. But I should also point out that if you look back into 2021, because we asked Senator Vance just 2 days ago here, when do you intend to resign? And he looked back at a reporter and said, well, when do you think I should resign? And if you look at what Vice President Harris did in 2021, when she was, moving from the Senate from California into the vice presidency, she resigned on January 18th of 2021, 2 days before she was sworn in as vice president.
Well, let me ask you this, Chad, about Vice President-elect J.D. Vance. Has President-elect Trump explained what his vice president's role will be in the new administration, what he expects from a Vice President Vance?
He hasn't said that, but the impression that we're getting is that he's probably going to be an enforcer. He was only in the Senate for about a year and a half before he was made the nominee. So he has some Senate relationships, but they're not as long as somebody maybe who's been around for 10, 12 years in the Senate. That might be to his detriment, frankly, because senators don't appreciate being leaned on by somebody else, especially somebody more junior, because senators are going to keep their own counsel on a lot of things. But we kind of have gotten the impression that he is going to help facilitate some of these nominees. When Matt Gaetz, the Republican congressman, now former Republican congressman from Florida, was nominated for attorney general, he was facilitating meetings for that. The same with Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary nominee. And so, he might be a more active vice president here. As I said about Harris earlier, he will be the president of the Senate. And we don't see a lot of vice presidents in the Senate anymore in the modern era. I mean, both Joe Biden and Harris were creatures of the U.S. Senate, but they weren't up here very much. I think that we might see Vance here more often, really, to kind of play bad cop. Sometimes if senators on the Republican side of the aisle don't support their nominees or go against some of the president-elect's initiatives.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, just one quick point on that. And I'm glad that Chad mentioned Joe Biden, because when Joe Biden was president, he did have that portfolio to work with the Senate.
When he was vice president?
Yes, when he was vice president. because Barack Obama was in the kind of same situation. He hadn't been in the Senate for very long. Joe Biden had. And Joe Biden had a lot more experience at being able to twist arms and cajole people in the United States Senate than J.D. Vance ever will, because he's only been there for a year and a half. So, you know, that's, I'm just not sure. And yeah, I think he probably will be sitting in that chair, but how effective he'll be remains to be seen.
Well, one more question for you, Howard, about news that broke. You mentioned the governor's race coming up in Ohio next year. Amy Acton has announced she's going to run for governor. How do you see that race shaping up?
Well, I think Amy Acton is probably going to be a very attractive candidate to a lot of people. She, during the pandemic, she was a calm, reasonable voice who became kind of a household name as people were watching the briefings that, that Governor DeWine had on a daily basis. She's not going to get it by acclamation, not, you know, because there are other Democrats who are going to run, probably the House Minority Leader, Allison Russo. And I've heard a lot of talk about Chris Redfern, the former Ohio Democratic Party chairman, who was a state representative, too. Is seriously thinking about jumping in that race. So it's going to be, there's going to be a fight next year for that nomination. But whoever it is going to have to run in a state that is becoming increasingly Republican, and where Republicans have won handily, easily, the last four gubernatorial elections.
Okay. I want to make a point that one of our callers raised. We had a call from John who wanted to mention that Social Security is entirely self-funded. He brought that up because we were talking about it being on the chopping block. Chad, was that when you talked about Social Security, is that a matter of perhaps ages being changed and that sort of thing to reduce costs?
Well, that's something that President-elect Trump said that he would not do when he was interviewed a few weeks ago by Kristen Welker on Meet the Press. He was asked that question directly. He said, we're not going to change any of the retirement ages. Yet when you talk to a lot of the Republicans in the House, and I questioned Mark Alford, who is a Republican from Missouri, who specifically spoke about this on Fox Business just a few weeks ago, he talked about raising that age. And Jody Arrington, who's the Budget Committee chairman from Texas, that's in one of his proposals. They've all talked about that. And so there seems to be some conflict between where the president-elect stands and where some of the Republicans are. And again, you know, there's no magic wand in all this. You just don't say you're going to cut all this money, and then it happens. So they're going to have to take tough votes.
Well, I've been talking with Fox News senior congressional correspondent Chad Pergram and WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Thank you both so much for your time today. Up next, an investigation reveals a pattern of child sexual abuse involving school coaches in Kentucky. We'll discuss why this abuse persists. This is Cincinnati Edition.